might have heard that the Metallica boys were gonna play some heavy shit tonight.
Welcome to another edition of Metal Tales from the Road. I'm here with our longtime friend, Linda Thomas, all the way from Austria. How are you doing? Good to see you.
I'm great, thanks.
Sometimes when we hang out, I had to ask Ethan when he put this together. I was like, what time is it there? Because I feel like sometimes when we've hung out like on Discord or when we've done like the Metallica Mondays or we've done a Zoom hang, it's like crazy early for you, like 4 a.m. and stuff.
But it's fine. So if you're... Early mornings are my afternoons.
Mm-hmm.
So it's around 3:30 p.m. now, and that's pretty perfect.
So this is a good time for you, yeah. And a good time for me, too. I just dropped my kid off at school. I'm having my first coffee of the day. This is perfect! But you do, when we do those late, I guess when it's like later in the evening for us, it's pretty early for you. And you are always a trooper. You're pretty much always there. And I chalk that all up to, first of all, you're super cool and you're like just a part of the fam. But also, I think the youthfulness has a big part to do with it. Because you're like, fuck it, I don't need sleep. And old people like me are like, we like budget things around sleep. Like we covet sleep so much that if anything seems to might maybe get in the way of sleep, we're like, no, I'm not doing that. So it's nice. I remember being that. I remember feeling like I don't need any sleep. Do you ever get tired?
I think the secret behind those 2 a.m. Discord stuff or Zoom hangs was that I was either doing a pre-nap on the day.
A pre-nap.
Or I just had the fortune to sleep in.
You were able to sleep in, right? Because you're in school, right?
I was in law school, but I decided to drop out just this term. And I got accepted at a new college for social work, and I'll start that in fall.
Very cool. Well, congrats. I remember you talking about being sort of overwhelmed by some of the things you were sort of being walking into with the law school stuff.
Yeah, totally. It was just, I just decided that I don't want to be surrounded by those people all the time, and especially not work with them too, because it's a very classy and elite school attitude and stuff that people just have, and yeah. That's not really my scene,
right? I actually have relatives. A cousin of mine is a lawyer who married a lawyer, and it's such a cliche, but Jesus, they fucking argue with each other forever, and you know it's their job. They're just so good at it, but man, good God. It just goes on and on forever. I'm not sure what kind of law. Was there a specific field of law you were looking at?
Yeah, it was family law, that kind of stuff.
Were you going to be like Richard Gere in Primal Fear? Were you going to be like in the courtroom, like slamming folders down and demanding, private sessions with the judge and all that?
More the opposite. I was more looking on becoming a judge because that was really interesting to me. And a friend of mine actually is a judge, and I've been looking over his shoulder for one day. And was really admiring that profession because it's lots of responsibility.
Right.
But it's taking ages to become a judge. Like you're at law school, then you have 1 year of becoming, getting to know court. And then there was another training to become a judge that takes years. And yeah, that's a bit of too much time for me to spend on one simple job.
In America, we have many famous people. It's just something we do here. We make famous people and we're obsessed with fame. Now we have Hulk Hogan, we have John Bon Jovi, we have Bozo the Clown. The list is endless. Gallagher, the comedian. We have a million famous people. But the most famous person in America might be Judge Judy. Have you ever seen Judge Judy?
I actually haven't.
Okay. It's like one of the most popular reality TV shows ever. And she's one of the highest paid reality TV stars ever, in which she's a judge, presumably a legitimate judge here in the States. And she just sees, they televise it, and she sees people's court cases. It's usually a bunch of trashy redneck shit that's really dramatic. That's not my baby, but you're a woman. You had the baby, but it's not my baby. How could it not be your baby? And, you know, that's what we think of when we think of a judge. It's like Jerry Springer meets the judicial system. So maybe you could come over to America and be a judge. Maybe it's a faster track over here. I don't know. I can't imagine she did all the things that judges really have to do that Ruth Bader Ginsburg did. No way. But anyway, I digress. We should talk about Metallica, I guess, huh?
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
Well, I want to talk about you play ukulele too. I want to talk about a ton of stuff. All right, but let's talk about Metallica, because I ostensibly that's why people have tuned in. Where does it start with you, with the band? What was the first record you heard? Like, because you, I know you well enough to know that you are like me. You're like Ethan. You're like a lot of our friends, where you are a hardcore Metallica fan. You're beyond casual. And I think there's always a certain point that happens to one of us where that switch occurs. Do you have something you could point to for you?
The switch from casual to hardcore fan probably was my first gig. Like after on the drive home to my first gig, from my first gig, I was like, okay, I need to dive in now. The years before was just, I don't even really know how I discovered Metallica. It was just a random YouTube, not even search, just the Master of Puppets video just came up somewhere.
Okay.
And I was so shocked, kind of, because I hadn't really listened to heavy metal before. Maybe some Nirvana and stuff.
You were listening to, like, grunge and punk, that kind of thing, early 90s stuff?
Yeah, Green Day, that kind
of
stuff.
So it came up as, like, a suggested video on YouTube, and it was Master of Puppets?
Yeah, the Never music video, and I was just blown away. And the funny thing was, I think I listened to the song and watched that video 24/7 for like a month. I didn't know anything else about the band. I didn't check them out or anything. Maybe I read the Wikipedia article, but that was about it. Until, I don't know, second year of high school. And I had a really cool English teacher who just said, let's don't do normal stuff today. Let's check out new music. And someone was always late. And he showed us the music he set up on his alarm to wake up. And one of the songs was Wherever I May Roam.
Nice.
Yeah, the sitar intro came and was like, yeah, that's not that heavy. I probably would sleep through that. And then the song really started, and I was like, whoa, what's that?
And you knew this was the same band that you had watched the video 24/7, or did you not know?
I did not know that.
Wow, okay.
Like, he was like, yeah, that's Metallica. And I was like, wait, that name sounds familiar. And I just pulled my phone up, looked them up, and I was like, oh, those are the same guys. I really have to check out this band now. And that's where it started.
I like the idea of if someone had not been late to the class and you had just been business as usual, you never would have heard what his alarm playlist was. You never would have heard Wherever I May Roam, at least not at that point. And you might just still be listening to Master of Puppets on loop on YouTube. He really freed you. I consider you as like trapped in some sort of cosmic Metallica loop. And that really cool English professor, what did he teach?
English,
yeah. He freed you. You've been freed by him. You should send him like a bouquet of flowers. I'm just saying. I'm fond of the singing telegram. Perhaps send him one of those. All right. So you hear Wherever I May Roam. And that's actually a pretty good, that straddles kind of two eras, right? You're hearing probably the best song, arguably, of the first four albums, Master of Puppets. And then you're hearing just a total groove. You're hearing a great example of Black Album. And I think the two best examples of Black Album, if you were going to play them, someone who was like from another planet, would be Sabbath True or Wherever I May Roam. So you heard Roam and you liked them both. Neither of them bummed you out. That's good. That's good news. So what was the next step?
The next step was it's kind of typical of my generation. And what I usually do when I check a band out is that I go on Spotify or Apple Music and just listen to the best of essential playlist.
Okay.
That's what I did probably for the next couple of years. Or year better, because then I suddenly was like, hey, there's a new album by Metallica, and Hardware came out.
Good timing.
Yeah. And I think that was the first album I ever fully listened to.
Wow.
Like, in order.
Well, it's a good thing they still make good albums. A lot of bands, I was talking to, who were we talking? We were talking to somebody about this recently, Ethan and I. I was the guest for next week. And, you know, bands 40 years in don't often make very good albums. It's even some of the greatest artists of all time. Like, I'm not buying the new Paul Simon album, and I love Paul Simon. It's so cool that someone like you, a younger person like you, could be like hearing a few things here and there, and then, oh, they got a new album. I guess I'll check that out. What if it had been horrible?
What if it had been Saint Anger?
I think if it had been Saint Anger, you would like Saint Anger.
Yeah, probably.
Because people who listen to that for the first time, like who were just discovering Metallica for whatever reason, just because of their age, really, and circumstance, they didn't know any different. I wish I had the gift of hearing it in a vacuum, because then I might like it. If I had been 13 years old and had just been listening to like Iron Maiden, and everyone's like, you're Metallica, they have this new album about being mad, and I'm an angry 13-year-old kid, and there's a big orange fist on it, and I'm listening to it going, I don't know what the fuck's going on, I just like it. Unfortunately, I was a little bit beyond that. I was about 17 or 18, and I was too far gone. I was too lost. Where do you stand on the Saint Anger issue?
I have some Saint Anger days, actually. I just feel like I'm in the right mood for the album.
Where you just wake up shouting, kill, 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 kill.
Yeah, or someone or something pisses me off. And that's actually a pretty good album if you're angry.
Yeah.
So
aptly titled. Yeah. What about the Load Reload area? Where do you stand on some of those songs, those albums? The short hair, the nipple rings, the guy liner, the boa, James rubbing mud on his face.
You put me on that, actually, because I skipped those albums pretty much. Skipped those, and I skipped S&M one. I was just too consumed by the first four albums or something.
Right. Understandable.
So I really have been in the last 2 years or something, I've just been on to Load and Reload. But I really, really like them. It's still heavy, and it's a right mixture between heavy and calmer stuff, mm-hmm. and really getting into the lyrics.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that was my, I think the longer we do the podcast, the more I realize that God, whatever he or she is, gave me a mission, and that mission was to get more people listening to Metallica albums from 1995, 96, and 97. So I feel good hearing that my work is being completed out there in the world. But yeah, I think lyrically, that's such an interesting time. And actually a video, people have been sending a lot of this to us because it's Load and Reload pertinent, but a new video surfaced of James. And it looks like it's a Death Magnetic era, like late aughts, maybe 2010. And it's him talking about the song. Someone asked him, what are the songs you're most proud of? People probably ask people like James Hetfield that all the time. And he like really surprisingly mentions, I think, exclusively Load and Reload songs, which I was like, wow. He mentions Fixer even, which I've never even heard him say the word Fixer except for on the album. Yeah. He talks about Fixer. He talks about Bleeding Me. He talks about the third verse of The Unforgiven 2. I'm like, holy shit, maybe he's been listening to the podcast and going back and checking out his own stuff.
Yeah, that's oddly specific.
I think the video cut off right at before he said Clint was right. So, anyway.
We need another Lars thing.
Yeah, instead of Lars was right. And it could be Lars was, you know what, we'll make two of them. It'll say Lars was right, and then it'll say ... about Napster. And then mine will say, it'll have a big, it'll be much bigger than the one that's for Lars, maybe three or four times the size of Lars's. And it'll have my face on it, looking tight and right, looking thin and beautiful. And it'll say, Clint was right about Load and Reload.
Exactly. I'll make that. I'll send that to you.
You can make it and send it to me. And then I'll go on stage with the band when they play their last song, which will be Fixer. And I'll even be invited to take the big bow with them on stage. And anyway, and then we hang out. And then I move in with James and Vale. And maybe we become best friends forever. I don't know. I can't tell the future. All right. So what was the first gig you saw? You said the first gig you saw was the Die Hard turning point.
Yeah. The first gig I saw was actually the August 16th in Vienna at the Ernst Happel Stadion.
What year?
2019.
Oh, this was your first gig. The gig we're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. I did not know this.
Yeah, so they came to be end of the year prior. And the problem about that was that I definitely wanted to go. I was like begging my mom to go, but I wasn't 18 when the tickets went on sale.
Gotcha, gotcha.
And it was sold out in like 3 days because the arena they came to is kind of small. And I was so upset and so mad at my mom, but I really wasn't able to go.
Haven't spoken to her since, right? You've been massively estranged since. You know, when I was getting ready to talk to you, I thought that that was the gig. I just checked out Vienna on the World Wire Tour. And I'm sure you've looked, but it was a really good set list.
Yeah.
They played Bread Fan, which is in that. I guess they were doing a cover slot on those arena shows. But not to rub it in, not to rub it in. You couldn't go. Hey, sometimes that's the way it works. But you did get to go to the stadium gig. Now, let's talk about it at the top, because I'm being reminded as I look at this. Did you get there early enough to see Ghost and Bokassa?
Yeah, I did. The actual top was that a week prior to the gig, I got an email that I won Snakebit passes. And I absolutely freaked out. And I was so happy. And was like, okay, we have to get there really early. I want to check out everything. And of course, it didn't go like I planned.
And who did you take with you?
A good friend of mine, Sabrina. She's a couple years older than me. And a couple of friends of her who had also tickets, so we carpooled there. And yeah, it was actually, I was kind of afraid that it was going to rain because it was raining like most of the, early afternoon.
Yeah.
And it was still raining when we got there slightly because Lars still had his tent over the drums, but it stopped.
Yeah. You know, I was at the show, the very first show where they put that thing together. Because it rained on us for like 7 hours. And I was telling someone the other day that it may have been on the podcast, but I was wearing really tight pants because that's what you do if you play in bands over here. You wear tight pants. And it had just rained on me for 7 hours. And then I watched a long concert. And the next day, I just could hardly move. I was like, could hardly get out of bed. Anyway, so it stopped raining. Did they leave that little clamshell thing over the drums in case it started raining again, or did they take it away?
They took it away.
Okay.
Because it was like, I don't know, 4 p.m. or something when it stopped raining, and they, sure it wouldn't start up again.
So, okay, so let's just take these openers one by one. So, of course, the first of three was our friends, Bokassa. We've done an episode with Jorn. And they've got a new album coming out, by the way. So, had you heard of Bokassa, and what did you think of the gig?
I hadn't heard of Bokassa at all. It didn't even occur to me to check them out prior to the gig. And I think that was around, they played like half an hour after we got there. And I was just super overwhelmed with everything that I spent the whole Bokassa gig looking around because it was my first time in a stadium.
Wow. So, and for people who may not know, you and I are a part of an elite group now because we've both been in the snake pit. And so thank you very much. When you are in that snake pit, you have a unique vantage point because you can turn around. I remember I was on the rail in the snake pit, and I remember during the show a few times turning around and looking behind me, and it's just there are 50,000 people behind you. It's almost like being on stage. Where at in the snake pit were you?
I was at the right side, a bit down the snake pit, not exactly at the end where the stage part is, but at James's mic on the right.
Awesome. Did you have any interactions with the boys?
Yeah, quite a few actually.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Okay, so what did you think about Bokassa?
I think they were pretty good. They didn't really like say that I absolutely checked them out, but it was definitely a fun gig. And I think they had a bit of bad luck because there weren't that much people there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still pretty early. So, there weren't that many people cheering and stuff. So
that's kind of the curse of, I've been in that position where you're the first of three. You got to try to come out and make people pay attention. You got to try to hit them in the mouth, whoever's there. But people are finding their seats. People are getting a beer. People are peeing their pants. People are doing all sorts of shit. They're not really there to see you. You are basically entertainment and background music. Now, the next band, I just think you guys got such a unique opportunity on that tour, the Stadium European Tour, to see Ghost in that capacity, because Ghost now headlines arenas by themselves. That was definitely one of the last, you know, support roles of Ghost. So, I mean, the thought of, I'm just thinking now in my mind's eye, like, tomorrow you can go to Bridgestone Arena and see Ghost and Metallica. I mean, unbelievable. Like, I felt like the openers, I kind of had to tolerate a little bit. I kind of had to tolerate Volbeat. I kind of had to tolerate Avenged fucking Sevenfold. I even kind of had to tolerate Jim Brewer, because I like him. I had a good time. It was entertaining, but I wasn't, you know, I don't go see Jim Brewer in my free time. Ghost is a band I'm rocking privately. So where did you stand with Ghost? Were you already a fan? Did you kind of know it was going to be an intense visual thing?
No, not at all. I was just curious about it because I've heard the name Ghost before and I've seen Ghost charts before, but I didn't know any of their music. And I was just really excited about the backdrop when I saw that cool purplish backdrop. I was like, okay, that's kind of interesting. It's kind of super interesting. And when I started, I was like super into it and a little surprised, and was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna definitely check those guys out and definitely gonna see them again, because it was great and the people were like all super hyped.
Yeah.
It was really great.
Pretty clear in the Snake Pit that there were some Ghost fans there too.
Yeah, people were singing along. And,
yeah,
and he was interacting with the guys too, and with us and the audience. So that was really, really cool.
Were they able to come out on like the Snake Pit, like those little catwalk things? Did they walk out at all? Like where James comes out?
Yeah, they walked on the catwalk. And he kneeled down to the people and put up a pretty good show.
Wait, what iteration of his whole deal was he? Was he wearing like a mask, or was he just wearing like white face paint?
It was the white face paint stuff. Okay. And I was just, because once it stopped raining, it got hot again.
Yeah, right.
But when I was just looking at each other, like, how doesn't he melt underneath that stuff? Because with all the clothes
right,
he was wearing.
Right. I'm sure he was hot as shit.
Yeah.
Hard to look evil and cool when you're like, fuck, it is hot. I would not do well in hell. If hell is hotter than this, maybe I shouldn't be this evil Pope guy. All right, so they finished their set, and in preparation for the tour, had you already started listening to the podcast at this time?
No.
So you hadn't heard the podcast. We're straddling that demarcation point of you becoming a diehard and you being casual. So you knew you liked Master of Puppets. You knew you liked Wherever May Roam. You heard the new album. And you're like, I'm going to go see him on the tour for their new album. Had you done any other investigating, like what songs they might play? Did you know what Kill 'Em All was, etc.?
Yeah, I've checked out some of the last two stuff. I have checked out pretty much everything except Road Reload and S&M one.
Wow.
Wow. So I knew lots of most of the stuff, actually.
Okay. Did you have any sense of what they might be playing? You know, we all know now that they have the rotating slots. You know, if you've been to more than one show, or if you sort of watch set lists like I do when I can't go on a tour because I get FOMO, I get jealous, I kind of know the program. Like, I remember someone telling me at the Birmingham show, they're like, do you think they're going to play, do you think they're going to play Puppets? And I'm like, dude, they're going to play Master of Puppets. Yeah. I know they're going to play Puppets. You think they're going to play Sabbath True? I'm like, I know they're going to play Sabbath True. So did you have that sense about it? Or were you kind of just waiting to see what happened?
Both a bit, because I knew they were going to start at Hardwire.
Okay, gotcha.
I knew they were gonna play Master, Bells, Seek.
Yeah.
Sabotage. Yeah, they're all the essential ones.
Yeah. I'm looking at the set list now, and this is, first of all, there's some treats on here, which we will get to, and one of them is a surprising treat for me. But the first thing I noticed that's unusual, it looks like it goes from Hardwired into The Memory Remains, which is pretty unusual. They were usually doing the Hardwired Atlas Rise punch, right?
I was totally surprised by it too. It was like Hardwired finish. And I was like, okay, Atlas. And then he started Matt Moore and was like, oh, hold on.
That's fun. That's a fun. So
yeah.
So how were people's reactions to Hardwired? Was there a sense for you in Austria? Because I think it was different in pockets of the world. when they played the new stuff, was it, how did it feel? I mean, you were in the Snake Pit too, so you had a heightened experience. People in the Snake Pit are diehards, but did it seem like people knew Hardwired and were excited about it? Were they singing along to that one?
Yeah, the mood was pretty, really good to Hardwired, and we were also hyped when we heard the Hardwired intro. Everyone was just flued at the stage and just sang along and jumped along, and it was pretty cool because I'm small. I'm like 1 meter and 52 centimeters. Like, I'm smaller than Lars, actually.
That's how we measure things now in the Metal Up Your Podcast world. How many Larses are you? I'm probably, if we're counting like belly out and height, I'm probably 2.5 Larses. But you're like, you're almost one Lars.
Yeah, not even one
Lars. Not even one Lars. Half a Lars? 3/4 Lars?
No, wait.
How many Larses are you?
3/4 of Lars.
Three quarters of Lars. Okay. I can see it. See it with mind's eye. So you're saying you're smaller. Was it getting kind of rowdy in the Snake Pit?
No, I had a pretty secure spot. I was right at the rail, exactly right side of the rail. I could put my hand on the stage. It was kind of, except one of the guys came close to us, then it got rowdy a bit.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it was fine.
Yeah.
But that's normal.
So when memory happens, I'm guessing the crowd went ape shit because even if people don't listen to Reload, they start playing Memory Remains live. The whole crowd's like, yeah, I like this song.
Yeah, it was awesome. And that's like a tiny bit, like SNM2. So singing along, we were singing a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. Yeah, it was so cool because James was still playing that Camel Roger thing,
yep,
which I haven't seen before. And Craig was playing the Mummy, actually.
Nice. Classic. I love that camo vulture. He was playing the camo Snakebite for a while, but I don't think I ever got to see the camo vulture. He would come out with a black vulture for Hardwired Atlas. I'm pretty sure he did that consistently. But yeah, the camo vulture. So he stayed with that guitar on Memory? He played that on Memory as well?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think so, yeah. Because they got straight from Hardwired to Memory.
Yeah.
Kind of 1-2 punch.
And then I believe at that time, Four Horsemen and Harvester of Sorrow were both rotating slots, right?
I think so.
So that was kind of a kill 'em all slot where they were doing maybe Motor Breath or Whiplash or Hit the Lights. And you got Four Horsemen, super fun. Everyone's sounding good so far. Everyone's looking good.
Everyone's sounding pretty good. And James got that Black Explorer with the Man's Wolf inlay.
Oh my gosh, I love that guitar.
So amazing. So it's like, I was like so into that. Kirk was playing that purple Ouija guitar.
Yeah, I love that too.
Yeah, it was so awesome. We were all jumping along and I didn't see Lars a lot because he was at the back of the stage and I couldn't really see him. But
you know what's interesting about where I was in the Snake Pit is the first few songs, all the guys were on the stage, kind of in their spots. But after the second or third song, they like went away and were just running around the whole time. And I'm on the rail, so all I could really do was look at Lars. I couldn't see the show really. So I actually had a lot of interactions with Lars. A lot of people did that were just up front because most of the show started to occur on those little catwalk things, which was not a bummer, but, you know, I think people got to see the other boys more than we even did. But in your world where you were in the Snake Pit, you get to interact with him the least. I get that.
But it was so great because I was really kind of hoping to see Four Horsemen.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. I didn't know that it was kind of a deep cut.
Yeah, it is kind of a deep cut, right? They don't play it that often. What about Harvester of Sorrow? Did that register for you, getting some Justice sauce in the first 5 songs?
Yeah, I was so happy. I was totally happy. I think I would have preferred Justice over Harvester, but Justice is like a once in a lifetime thingy.
Yeah, they don't play that one much. They're like, you want to do the easier song on the album or the 10-minute juggernaut? They're like, let's do the easier one.
Yeah, exactly. But I was super pumped about Harvester. And I think that was around the first song the guy started to use the catwalk thing. So
yep, which is smart. They come out, they kind of plant for a minute, let everyone kind of adjust to the guy I've idolized my whole life, in my case, or the guy I see on TV all the time, he's right there in front of me. And then they start getting some movement going, and then they're just putting on a fucking awesome show. How about Unforgiven? They take it down a notch. They play a big ballad. Was everyone pretty rapt, or did everyone was quiet, you know, acoustic intro time, PP time for some people, or chatty time?
There was a bit of chatty time behind me, yeah. I guess, especially because we couldn't see James because it was like at the completely other side
right.
of the stage.
Yeah.
But it was the first time Kirk brought Greenie out.
Hey. Did you know what Greenie yeah. was at the time?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So you can appreciate now that you saw it, but at the time you were like, oh, that's a cool old looking guitar.
Yeah, exactly. And he was like walking the catwalk with it, and I was just tremendously afraid he was going to fall. It was still a bit slippery.
Yeah. And he's prone to falling. I mean,
yeah,
he falls down sometimes, as we all do. Not usually, not usually in front of 50,000 people, but that's Kirk for you.
It was kind of funny on a catwalk. It was just, please don't fall.
Well, one of the biggest treats, I think, of that leg of the tour was Here Comes Revenge. Because at a certain point, it seemed like, oh, the Hardwired songs that kind of got ignored, it's like, oh, I guess they're just not going to play those. They played Man Unkind like 2 times. They never played Am I Savage. They never played Murder One. And for a while, I was like, well, they're never going to play Here Comes Revenge. If they're not going to play Am I Savage, why would they play Here Comes Revenge? And then lo and behold, they start busting that out. And you got to see that song 6.
It was great. I bet. Was super surprised.
Yeah, that's such a treat.
It was so surprised by that song. Yeah, and I really like it.
I do too, yeah.
And it was, I think the whole crowd was surprised too, because there was like, first 2 minutes were like, oh, okay, wow. And then everyone was singing along.
Nice. I am guessing that many people there didn't know what it was. It's a Hardwired deep cut. I'm going to guess that people outside the Snake Pit were like, yeah, this is awesome. What is this? I don't know. It's cool, though. Man, I wish they would play Frantic.
I was just so glad that I kind of memorized the whole Hardwired album.
Yeah, right.
So I could.
Really, you got to be the cool kid in the Snake Pit. Yeah, you were the cool kid in the Snake Pit. They were like, man, this girl really likes this band. She's singing every word to this song that we don't know what it is. I don't know if I'd be able to sing every word to Here Comes Revenge. I would just wait for the chorus and be like, Here Comes Revenge. I'm like, yeah, I know this song. I totally know this song. I'm not singing it because I don't want to.
It kind of must have sucked for the friend that went with me, because probably she must have known Sandman and Nothing Else Matters.
Exactly.
But maybe Master of Puppets, but I don't know. Don't really know if she knew what the rest of the songs were.
Yeah.
But I didn't care.
No.
At all.
No, good for you. Yeah, you can't. Your buddy went with you. You want to make sure they're having a good time, but when you're seeing Metallica, one of your favorite bands, yeah, you can't babysit your buddies. They got to just deal with whatever they're dealing with. Plus, it's like, hey, I get you don't know the songs, but behold some of the greatest songs ever. Behold one of the greatest bands ever. Pay attention. Okay, so then you get the kind of insane 1-2 punch of Moth and the Flame and Sabbath True, 2 stone cold classics that I would be okay if they never left the set list again. If those 2 songs are played at every show forever from now on, me personally would be a-okay with that. How about you?
Kind of Moth and the Flame has a real kind of bad taste in my mouth.
What?
Since the Grammy stuff, I really love the song. I even got a shot, but whenever I hear the song, I just remember the Grammy performance of it.
So what's traumatizing you about the performance? The fact that the mic didn't work, or do you have like a stylistic issue with Lady Gaga?
The mic incident.
Okay, so you get a little bit of PTSD for James. So you get a little bit of that surge. Well, I understand that.
But it was really cool because James was right in front of me.
Yeah.
Like, with his back turned to me, but right in front of me.
Describe that feeling. I've tried to do this. I'm curious how you would describe it. There's one thing to be at the big rock show and, hey, there's Kirk Hammett and the ghost guy came down and gave me a high five. You're kind of dealing with all that. But then there are certain moments in the show, and this happens a lot in the arena tour when you were on a certain rail. The arena gig was weird because they ran around the whole time. So occasionally one of them would end up right in front of you and like, you know, I remember I looked up and like James was doing Spit Out the Bone right in front of me. Describe that feeling, because that's a unique moment in the show.
I was definitely respectful of not totally jumping in his way, kind of.
Yeah.
But I was so it was just surreal.
Yeah.
Because that's what you've been waiting for since you heard the first song ever. And now it's actually happening.
It's what you've been waiting for since you played Master of Puppets on loop for 24 hours a day.
Exactly. it was actually happening.
Yeah.
And he was kind of like kneeling down and playing like a bit away from me to the right. And I was actually like, get back here. What are you doing? Do that in front of me.
Yeah. Leave me out of it, James. That's funny. Are you kind of a shy person? Would you consider yourself a bit shy?
Yeah, definitely.
You're like, look, I want to interact with you and see you, but don't. Yeah, too much at once.
And I think I opened up at a gig because I was actually pre-gig. I was actually talking to a couple of people, but my friend was doing a PP play.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm kind of a extrovert and introvert, if that makes sense.
I think there's something too about being at a Metallica concert where, because I'm actually extremely introverted, and I think that when you're around people in the Snake Pit, there's a sense, I don't know if you felt this way, Linda, but there is a sense where you're like, the common purpose of us all being here is enough to get me to just start talking to strangers. Where otherwise, if we're at, you know, if we're at Subway getting a sandwich, I might not do that.
Yeah, exactly. And a couple of people just right next to me were at the meet and greet before because they had the stickers and everything and the stuff they got signed.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw them at the Metallica Instagram story. And the guy next to me just like started talking to me. And he was from Berlin. He was talking English, but he was from Berlin. So it was really cool. And all the people were so nice. They were just like, if and I got in the Snake Pit and kind of checked out the perfect spot to be in. They were like, oh yeah, sure, you can stay here and we'll watch a spot while you go buy a t-shirt.
Yeah, I had that experience too. It's really cool, right?
So nice.
So then you get the next two songs are arguably the two most interesting songs in the set. No Leaf Clover, which was a super treat, and Frantic. So yeah. You were not as familiar with S&M. So were you familiar at all with No Leaf Clover?
Not at all. I started playing it. It was like, wait, I don't know that. What song is that? It could only be from like S&M or Load and Loop because I don't know that.
Right.
Those albums.
Did you like it?
But yeah, I was super, because the intro is kind of calm and clean sounding.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Then it got heavy and like, well, that's cool enough. I used the time to actually have a couple of pictures and film for a longer time because I could lay back a bit. But I realized that it was kind of rare because the people were really quiet and I think not that many people actually knew it.
Oh, really?
I think so. Because it got a bit wild in the Snake Pit because that's where the diehards are, but the rest of the stadium was kind of quiet.
Right.
Processing.
If I had been the friend that you took to the concert, you would have definitely known something was up with that song because you would have seen me just openly crying. And that would have been that would have sent a message. You're like, oh, I guess Clint really likes this song.
Yeah. And the next thing was actually the Kirk and Rob Doodle.
Oh, okay.
They kind of left that out online. But
yeah, weird. They don't normally do that. All right. So what happened with the Doodle?
First, it's funny because they played Chiffon by Wolfgang Ambrus, I think. It's cool because it's so funny because it's a song about skiing. I was pretty surprised that Rob got the German so well and so accurate. And because it's like Austrian dialect, it's even hard for Austrians.
Yeah, that is cool.
Rob nailed it.
Yeah. I like that they really try to make that a special thing for the particular city that they're in or country or however you demarcate that. But I think that's that's an opportunity to do that where they certainly don't have to. They could come out and play the same shit every time, give James a vocal break or a PP break. They don't have to try to make it cool for everybody. So, and it's a head scratcher for most people, but and I know that they even know that, but I know that for folks out there that you were picking up on what it was, you're like, this is cool. I like that. It's another layer of what makes them special, I think.
Yeah. it took me a minute to recognize it.
Yeah.
But as soon as I recognized it, I was hyped and it was fun singing along. And it's just the funny part about it was you could finally kind of recognize the Austrians in the crowd.
Right.
Because everyone was just singing along and hyped because it's like, you know, the after ski party song.
It's like everyone from Austria, they're like, raise your hands right now. You know, you could kind of see everybody. That's fun.
Yeah.
So what about Frantic? How did you feel about that? That's almost the most interesting song in the set. They started doing Saint Anger and Frantic in a rotating slot, if my memory serves. And,
yeah,
you know, I've gotten to a point in my Metallica fandom where I kind of want to see one of these songs live.
I was surprised. I didn't expect Saint Anger material at all.
Yeah.
Between Frantic and Saint Anger, I guess Frantic is the more rare song.
Yes.
So it took me a second to like, oh, we're getting Saint Anger stuff. But then I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
Because I could see Rob was like right by my side. James wasn't. I still enjoyed it. I think live, it's, if you're hearing it live, it's way better.
Yeah, for sure.
Hearing it on the album.
Yeah. And I think it's just, I think this happened with Load and Reload, although I think those albums are much better than Saint Anger in almost every relevant area. But you put enough time on something and then it kind of just becomes interesting. Like, to me, Saint Anger material live is just it's more interesting to me almost than The Memory Remains or Seek and, it's definitely, I'll tell you this, it's definitely more interesting to me than Seek and Destroy. Seek and Destroy is like the one Metallica song that they play every time that I'm like, I don't ever care to see that song again. I love the song, yeah. But man, I would happily replace that one. So they do Frantic, and then they go on this massive run. One, Puppets, Bells, Creep, Seek. There was a version of that in ours. I'm not going to get the order right, but it was like One, Sabbath True, Moth. It was like another run of like just fucking, they just hit you hard. What did those five songs feel like? Was it just a pummeling? You got to see your beloved master of puppets?
Yeah, that was epic. That was so epic. Because James did parts of it right next to me and he walked like on the right catwalk side.
Yeah.
Like he walked by and was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I can't. I'm going to die in a minute.
appropriate. That's an appropriate response.
I was so happy to see that song live, finally. So it's like, if my life ended now, I'd die happily.
And at this point, you're creeping towards the end of the main set. Has the lightning already struck you where you're like, that's it, this is my band, things are not going to be the same after tonight? Or was that moment still yet to come?
I was so in a cloud and I was so into it that I think that moment came the minute I've walked out of the stadium.
Okay, cool. You're like processing what has just occurred. I've been there where you're just in the moment. Yeah, I like that imagery. You're in the cloud and then it takes a minute later where you're like, oh my God, I think a thing happened to me. I think something happened.
Yeah, exactly.
So did they do the thing on Seek and Destroy where they come to the end of the stage and there's another kit that comes out?
Yeah, that was at Bells.
Oh, they did that for Bells. So they did the three songs like that.
Yeah, they went to the front of the stage at Bells. And James was kind of joking with Lars. I don't remember what he said, but it was like, no, it's getting dangerous because this guy is coming on stage. The whole show kind of turned because we were looking and we kind of saw the whole stadium in the dark and all the people. So, it was really, really great.
I had to actually fight off mild panic attack vibes. I didn't have one. And I don't like people that throw that around like, oh, I had a panic attack. It's like, dude, when you have a panic attack, you're on the ground because you think you're dying. But I did, when I could see the crowd that big, those few moments where maybe the house lights were on, I did feel a little overwhelmed by how many people were there and have to fight off that thing a little bit. I don't know how those dudes look at that every night and feel comfortable. It's just such a trip. Okay, so Seek happens. Did you know that the first encore song was this sort of rotating slot of the cool Thrashers, or did you just think maybe they'll play Enter Sandman?
Something happened before Seek, so there was Creep. I was kind of filming the start of Creep, and But suddenly James like walked over to me and started high-fiving people. And I was getting frustrated because he was doing it all the time and I never caught his hand or something like that.
Yeah.
And he kind of seemed to notice because like went back and kind of shook my hand and was just like, what the fuck? And continued playing. And when he kind of finished with people, he just held out his hand again and just took my hand and just laid a pick in it.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, thanks. And it was just gone again. And it's like, oh my God, high five to a couple of people. And it was just so great.
Do you have the pick in a place of honor?
Of course.
Okay. Oh, hey, okay. Hey.
It's
pardon
securely,
me.
Yeah.
Pardon me, Linda.
It's securely in my,
pardon me for asking. Wow. Of course you do. So where do you keep it?
In the and beautiful cup at one point. I can't remember which song it was. Maybe it even was doing Seek. It was actually a Kirk was playing one of us and he just bent his guitar down a little and was trying to catch like the string and actually play it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's kind of fun.
You did that? You just got to like strum his guitar a little bit?
Yeah.
That's pretty fun.
It's cool. And it just smiled at me and was like, oh yeah, okay. So he wasn't afraid that Chicago, if we will have him again, but
it's cool. I feel like, I don't know if you felt this way, Linda, but I always feel like when they're doing the catwalk stuff with the snake pit, I always feel like they really are trying to make sure that the people in the snake pit are having a unique experience where they're doing shit like that. They're having you strum their guitar. They're going to plop a pick in your hand. They're going to smile at you and give you a high five. I feel like they're aware that those are the diehards and that they give a little more attention to those people. I think it's cool.
Yeah, totally. And it's fun because I got 3 warnings on like the website, the email, and even the paper that I got where the snake pit passes were in to do not touch the band. And I was like, yeah, well, I guess. But they touched me first.
I was about to say, the band may touch you, but you cannot touch the band. Because I was surprised to see that there's no like really rails or anything. Like you really could, if you were going to be uncool, which I never saw anyone do this, but you really could like reach out and touch their legs and shit.
Yeah.
But no one did that. Everyone was pretty cool. I think they do give you that talk. And your ass is ejected immediately if you do. But I feel like Metallica fans are pretty respectful. At least now. Yeah. At least now. Maybe not in the 90s.
Then it got dark. And was like, hold on a second, that can't be it. That can't be the gig.
So you didn't even know they would come back out. You were surprised by all this.
Yeah, I did know. I was just like, hold on. If that was the main gig, then all that missed is like bits, nothing, and Sandman. That just, I don't want it to be over yet. I'm not mentally
right.
Emotionally ready.
Yeah, yeah, I felt that too. I've had some concerts where I'm like, I had a great time, but I'm ready to go. And then I've had some that were mostly Metallica concerts. I was like, oh no, it's over, crap.
Yeah. And I was really like, Spitz is probably in my top 3 favorite songs from Hardwired. So I was so pumped to get Spitz because they were actually, I think Spitz was a rotating slot too.
Yep.
A bit.
Yep.
So I was so pumped to get Spitz and was like giving my phone to my friend and was like, do me a favor and film this because I'm gonna jump and scream and sing along and I kind of want to remember this.
Yeah, that's really cool. I honestly, it became kind of popular on the tour. I think just because they were paying attention to how much the fans were responding to the album. But I don't know if they're gonna play that song again. So I think it's really cool that a lot of us got to see it. And you're lucky, yeah, you got to see the one show and that's the one that came up that night. I would have the benefit of seeing multiple shows. So I got to see most of the rotating slot songs. So, and that being one of your top 3 of Hardwired, I'm glad you got to see that for sure. What about Nothing Else Matters and Sandman? Now, for a lot of us, we're kind of at that point thinking about the car, thinking about getting to the car a little bit. But for you, such a new fan, how did those songs feel? Those are the 2 biggest Metallica songs for sure.
Yeah, I think Nothing is more popular in Austria than Sandman is.
Wow.
So I knew Nothing. Before I kind of knew the band, but I didn't know it was Metallica. And I didn't know that Metallica is a heavy metal band.
Gotcha.
I was just like, oh, that's one of the 90s ballads that's around.
Yep.
But I was really kind of enjoying Nothing. And it was a really beautiful atmosphere because phone lights were on.
Right.
Everyone had their phone on with the flashlights.
That's the new lighter. Yeah, that's the modern lighter. Yeah. Everyone's holding up their vape pen that has a little blue glow. That's the modern lighter.
Yeah, that was so cool. It's beautiful to see. And I don't know. I think that was the moment my friend woke up. I was like, hey, I know that song.
Oh, finally, a song I know. Song 17.
Yeah.
Well, she was in for, you know, a nice 6-7 minute treat then, right? Because they played that song, and then she probably knew Enter Sandman also, right?
Yeah.
Did Lars do the thing that he always does in the States where he seemingly is a Wikipedia page about all the times that Metallica's played that part of the world or that venue before? Did he give a sort of touching, personalized treatment about Austria?
I think so. I can't exactly remember, but he definitely was babbling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All you can guarantee is that he was babbling into the microphone. Rob probably screamed like a monster. Kirk probably said the F word 35 times in two sentences. And then they're doing the thing where they're throwing out the cups full of picks. Did you receive any of those as well?
Yeah, I did.
But you keep those separate from the main one that was given to you.
Oh, I did. We didn't know because I didn't really catch one because they were all, people were like going crazy, and I just stepped onto one and just like I'm gonna pick it up later. And
that's a good strategy. They might have eaten your leg off if they had known that. You're like, I'm just gonna stand on this and be cool.
And so I went to the front of stage and took a bow, and then I just came back, and Kirk just stopped in front of me, gave me the pick, and just went off the stage. It was like he smiled as he kneeled down, smiled at me, and was just gone. So, oh wow. And my friend next to me was like, what again? How lucky are you? And I think the third one I stepped on, I gave to my friend, and she caught one too.
People on the rail in the States had these, like, they were like cylindrical things that looked like they hold a poster, and they had wrapped double-sided tape all around it so they could, you know, they're throwing these cups of picks on the floor and shit, and they could just reach down and like, it was like an adhesive, you know, they could just grab like 10 at a time. And then scoop them up. People go nuts for those picks. It's an interesting part of the whole deal. So, amazing first show. You got to see him in a stadium. You got to see him with Ghost. They played the song that got you hooked. They played Master of Puppets. You also got some really, now that you're a diehard, you can recognize that some of these songs are just massive treats. You got to see Spit Out the Bone, Frantic, Here Comes Revenge, No Leaf Clover. That's an amazing first show. I can get why you walked home from that and you were like, well, this is now a thing that's happening to me.
Yeah.
And how long after that did you discover the podcast?
I think a month after that. The cool thing about the date of the concert was the 16th of August, and the next day, the 17th, was my birthday.
Nice.
So that was definitely the way to celebrate my birthday.
Yep.
And I think a month after that, I started moving, and I needed something to do while I was packing. And that's when I just typed in Metallica in the podcast search. And that's how I discovered the podcast.
We are really great for putting something on when you have to do something else. You're driving, you're moving, you're packing up, you're playing frisbee with your dog, whatever it is. We're great for that.
Yeah. And it really, I burned down 10 to 15, 20 episodes during our time. So
did you start from the beginning?
I did start from the beginning and kind of listened to the new ones, and then to the new ones that came out the week.
Yep.
And then scroll back to the beginning and continued, but I haven't been caught up yet. Still have 100 episodes to go or something.
You still have 100 episodes to go?
Yeah. Wow.
Just skip them, don't worry about those. who even knows what we said for those 100 episodes? Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me. We've been friends since 2019 now. So you're a familiar face. And I like doing these because it gives me an opportunity to say thanks for the support. And you've been a patron for a while. And I've enjoyed sort of keeping up with your comings and goings in the world. And I always appreciate and enjoy your perspective. I'm glad that you are on the ride with us, and it was a pleasure to talk to you today.
Yeah, thanks.
Hey everyone, this is Ethan and Clint. We're here to tell you about supporting the show via Patreon.
That's right. Every week, Ethan and I work hard to bring you the best Metallica content possible. If you think the show has value, consider supporting us on a financial level at Patreon.
For $5 a month, or the price of 2 cups of coffee, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast continues to grow in quality and content. But that's not all.
In addition to being able to help sleep at night for supporting your favorite podcast, we've also come up with incentives to say thank you that are exclusively available to patrons. For example, for a pledge of $5 or more, you immediately get free downloads of every Cover Our World Blackened EP.
Ticket giveaways for shows like SNM2 and Slain Castle.
Box sets, rare vinyl, Metallica memorabilia like SNM2 guitar picks.
Email priority, meaning we'll read your email first on the show with a chance to ask guests like Hailstorm, Jay Weinberg of Slipknot, and Metallica Road Crew your very own questions.
And the opportunity to come on the show as a guest for our Metal Tales bonus episodes, in which you can tell us all about any Metallica show you've been to in the past.
All this and more for becoming a patron and supporting Metal Up Your Podcast.
We couldn't do this show without you, and to everyone on the ride with us, we sincerely thank you. Peace.
Adios.
Okay.